Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. And today it's going to be delicious. Really delicious, actually.
We're talking about medieval cooking. And before anyone thinks grey mush, bland stuff, nothing but porridge and turnips.
Stop! That's such a persistent misconception.
Absolutely. Medieval cooking was diverse and really delicious. We experienced that ourselves when we were at camp.
And today, we're basically cooking along with you. Meat, vegetables, with a starter and dessert. A complete menu, Viking-inspired.
So a main course with root vegetables in meat, plus a starter with herb quark, and to finish, skyr with berries and nuts.
The exciting thing is, when you look at what the Vikings actually ate, it wasn't exotic stuff at all.
No, not at all. Onions, leeks, cabbage, various root vegetables, all vegetables that grow well up here in the north. They usually prepared them in stews, simmering for hours over the fire.
And skyr. Everyone knows it from the supermarket today, but it's actually an ancient dairy product from the Viking Age.
That's right, many people forget that. And honey was the most important sweetener, whether from their own bees or gathered wild. There was no sugar. Sweetness otherwise came only from berries or fruit.
So when we serve skyr with honey and berries today, that's already pretty close to what people ate 1,000 years ago.
With camp cooking, the thing is that you
have to adjust first. No stove, no timer, no thermometer. You're standing there over an open fire and have to
develop a feel for it. Regulate the heat, stir, estimate when things are done.
But that's exactly what makes it special. That communal aspect. Standing together by the fire, stirring, tasting, chatting.
And then that smell when the meat hits the hot onions. It's such a
sweet and savory.
Yes, that's it. Sweet and savory with that honey note. You can smell it throughout the whole camp.
That's when the neighbors quickly come by asking what's cooking.
A classic. And then you share, of course.
What I find interesting, by the way, mead was actually more of a beverage to drink with food for the Vikings, not necessarily a cooking ingredient. So the mead vegetables thing is more of a modern camp creation.
That's true, but it just fits together perfectly. The honey wine gives the vegetables that sweetness that would otherwise be missing. And it's historically plausible. They had both ingredients on hand.
And for everyone wondering, can I make this at home? The answer is yes. Mead vegetables are super beginner friendly.
Exactly. You need carrots, parsnips, celery, onions, leeks, all things you can get at a regular supermarket. And a good mead, of course.
Speaking of mead, how much do you actually need?
A generous amount. The vegetables should be about 2/3 covered in liquid, so don't be stingy.
Quick note about the alcohol. Most of it evaporates during cooking, but not completely. If you have guests, point that out to them. That's important, especially for people who can't or don't want to drink alcohol.
Good point. That's one of those details you shouldn't forget.
So, and now, are you ready? We're taking you into the medieval kitchen.
Let's go, and believe me, after this episode, you'll be hungry. Before we get to cooking, we need to talk briefly about a misconception. The Vikings, they're often portrayed as if they only guzzled mead and gnawed meat off the bone.
The classic cliché. rugged Norseman, club in hand, meat between his teeth.
Exactly that. But when you look at the archaeological finds, reality was much more varied. They had proper kitchen gardens with a remarkable variety of vegetables.
Especially in the more southern Viking territories. So Denmark, Schleswig-Holstein, southern Sweden. Herbs like dill, parsley and cress grew there.
And as for vegetables, they had...
cabbage. That was the main vegetable, period.
Cabbage, leeks, onions, beans, peas. In Hedebü, they found loads of botanical remains that prove this.
And what about the carrots and parsnips in our recipe?
That's where it gets interesting. For carrots, the evidence from the Viking Age is really thin. They only came to Europe from the 10th century onward through Islamic expansion. For parsnips, it's actually plausible, but archaeologically they're hard to distinguish from wild carrots and other root vegetables.
Wait, does that mean our mead vegetables aren't as Viking authentic as we thought?
It's Viking inspired. That's an important distinction. The cooking technique, the mead, the principle with the root vegetables, that all fits. But the exact composition is a modern interpretation.
So, historically plausible, but not documented one-to-one. I actually find that more honest.
And what the Vikings definitely had, the fava bean. That was enormously important as a protein source, everywhere, coast and inland alike. It's hardy and needs good soil and water, but it grows reliably.
That explains the regional differences. Fish mainly on the coast, more variety from the gardens inland.
Coastal regions relied more heavily on fish. That was everyday fare rather than luxury, by the way. Meat, on the other hand, was rarer, more of a special occasion thing, except in autumn after slaughtering time, when there was also salt-cured meat.
Interesting. In the stories, it's always the big feast that's described. Suckling pig, ribs. But normal everyday life looked different.
Stews, simmered for hours over the fire. Cabbage, beans, onions, maybe a bit of meat if things were going well, all together in the pot.
They didn't know al dente.
Not at all. Everything was cooked soft, really stewed down. That had practical reasons too. Over an open fire, regulating heat is, more complicated than on a modern stove.
That's why those long cooking times were so common. You hung the pot over the fire and let the whole thing simmer away. Stir occasionally, add more liquid, wait.
That's also what's lovely about camp cooking today. You stand together by the fire, have time to talk, watch the food cooking.
What I'm also curious about, how did they sweeten things? No sugar, right?
Mainly honey. It was precious, but available. Mead was known, fermented honey with water, but more of an elite drink for feasts. The everyday drink was small beer or weak ale.
And today we use mead not just for drinking, but also for cooking. As a sweetener and flavour enhancer, even though there's no historical evidence for that. Back then, they used honey directly for sweetening.
Cooking with alcohol makes the dish more rounded. The sharpness evaporates, the sweetness stays, and the aroma infuses into the vegetables.
And because honey was the most important sweetener, a lot of things tasted different than we know them today. More savoury. Less sweet.
That's something to keep in mind when cooking medieval-inspired dishes. They had a different flavor world. Less sugar, more herbs, lots of cabbage-type vegetables.
But not bland. That's the point. Seasoned differently, but definitely flavorful.
And when that aroma spreads through the camp, that's when you realize they knew what's good.
So, now it gets practical. Let's start with the vegetables. Carrots, parsnips, celery. everything needs to be prepped, because that takes the longest.
And the nice thing is, you don't have to peel meticulously. For carrots and parsnips, it's enough to roughly remove the outer layer.
Then cut everything into rough pieces. Not too small. This stuff cooks for a while. About a finger's width is a good guideline.
And the celery?
That one you peel properly. It has that fibrous outer layer. Then also cut into pieces and set aside for now.
Now comes the part that really smells good.
The onions. Butter or lard in the pot, or oil if you're cooking modern. Heat over the fire. Meanwhile, peel the onions and cut them into thin strips.
With the fire, it's important that you
keep an eye on the heat.
On a modern stove, you just turn it down. Over an open fire, you have to hang the pot higher or lower, or push the wood to the side.
The onions go into the hot oil and get sautéed. Let them turn translucent until they start to caramelize. Season with salt. Historically, you'd have used herbs, or for heat, mustard seed or horseradish. Pepper is a modern solution. It was way too expensive back then.
And then?
Then comes the mead. You deglaze the hot onions with a generous pour of honey wine. That's the moment when the whole aroma of the dish unfolds.
That's the moment when the neighbors in camp start paying attention.
Absolutely. Then add a bit more water, or if you have it, whey or simple bone broth from scraps. The onions should be swimming in the mead, not just sticking to the bottom.
Topping up regularly is important. The meat partially evaporates while simmering.
Now quickly cut the leek and put it in a separate bowl. That one goes in... No, wait. That goes in only at the very end.
Why, actually?
Leek gets soft much faster than root vegetables. If you cook it from the start, you'll end up with mush. The carrots and parsnips need their time. The leek only needs a few minutes.
That's a good tip for cooking in general. Always think, what needs how long?
Now add the prepared root vegetables, carrots, parsnips, celery, to the onions in the pot. Pour in another generous amount of mead.
And it's important to keep an eye on the liquid level.
Right. There should always be enough liquid in the pot so nothing burns. But the vegetables don't have to be completely submerged. Don't forget to stir regularly.
And if you don't want to use that much meat, you can add water in between.
Put the lid on, or a wooden board if you don't have a lid, and let it simmer for about 15 minutes, with regular stirring.
Over the fire, that's mandatory anyway. You're standing there anyway, watching the fire, keeping an eye on the wood.
That's the lovely thing about it, this shared waiting, talking, stirring now and then.
And then the leek goes in?
When the root vegetables are almost done, yes. Leek in. Don't add any more mead. And continue simmering without a lid. Until only about a centimeter of liquid is left in the pot.
The liquid reduces and becomes more intense. That concentrates the flavor.
At the end, you poke a parsnip with a fork. If it's soft, you're done. The whole thing takes about an hour total. With two people, it goes even faster.
It looks and smells fantastic. A perfect dish to share with friends.
Absolutely. And it's surprisingly filling too.
True. This amount of root vegetables and the hearty sauce really satisfy.
It'll get you back on your feet after a long day at camp.
A real communal meal that warms you from the inside.
And the mead vegetables serve four people, by the way. Without the starter and dessert, 2 to 3 people will still get full from it. While the mead vegetables are simmering away, you have time for the sides. And those are really simple.
That's the beauty of it. You don't need complicated ingredients, no elaborate techniques.
Let's start with the appetizer. You take quark, add a spoonful of skyr.
Skyr is, by the way, sort of a... How do I describe it? firmer than yogurt, but creamier than regular quark, has that slight tanginess.
As we mentioned at the start, it's an ancient Nordic dairy product. The Vikings were already making it.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
The spoonful of skyr makes the quark smoother and gives it that special note.
Then fresh herbs go in and a spring onion, finely chopped.
Which herbs do you like best?
Chives, parsley, dill, depending on what you have. Cress is great too.
Dill fits especially well if you want to emphasize the Nordic character.
Mix it all together, season with salt and pepper. Done. Serve with fresh bread, whether from the bakery or homemade. Both work.
With historical breads, the thing is,
they were often denser and darker than our white bread today.
A hearty rye bread or sourdough bread comes close, but ultimately, use what you enjoy.
The great thing about the herb quark is that freshness. It perfectly balances the hearty meat vegetables.
And now the dessert?
Even simpler. You take skyr, this time as the base, and add berries. Raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, whatever's in season.
Or whatever you have dried. At camp, you don't always have fresh berries on hand.
If you use blueberries, I recommend adding some honey. They can be a bit tart sometimes.
And the nuts?
Those go on top. First crack them, then chop them up. And here's my favorite tip.
With the axe head?
Yes. You put the nuts on a board and whack them with the flat side of the axe head. Works surprisingly well.
That's such a typical camp kitchen moment. You don't have a food processor, but you do have an axe with you.
Improvisation is part of it. And it's just fun.
At the end, you stir everything together and serve it in wooden bowls. Or clay bowls, if you have them.
We eat with our eyes first. In a nice wooden bowl, the skyr with the colorful berries and nut pieces looks really inviting.
It's amazing how satisfying such a simple menu can be. Herb quark with bread, then the meat vegetables, and to finish, berries with skyr.
Three courses, all freshly prepared, all with ingredients you can easily get. And together, it makes a real feast.
Without hours of chopping or complicated techniques.
That's what makes camp cooking so special. That simplicity. You focus on good ingredients, prepare them with care, and the result speaks for itself.
And when everything is on the table, the quark, the steaming vegetables, the dessert in the wooden bowls, that's a really beautiful moment. Now, we've been through the recipe, but let's also talk about the equipment. What do you actually need for camp cooking?
The centerpiece is, of course, the cooking setup. A tripod over the fire with the cauldron hanging from it. Classic and functional.
This system has proven itself over centuries. You can hook the chain shorter or longer and regulate the heat that way.
Speaking of cauldrons, there are different materials. What's best to use?
Let me elaborate briefly. Many people think cast iron is medievally authentic. For the early and high Middle Ages, that's not true. Blast furnaces didn't exist until the 14th century, first in Sweden, then England in the 15th.
Really? So those heavy Dutch ovens are...
Historically speaking, anachronistic, yes. In the Middle Ages, they had forged iron pots or pottery. The classic round-bottomed ceramic pots, for example.
The ones with the round bottom that were placed directly in the embers.
Those exactly. For simple households, clay was standard. Affordable, functional, and when one broke, you just made a new one.
Copper and bronze existed too, but that was for wealthier folks.
Today, at camp, cast iron is still practical. It lasts forever, distributes heat well,
and most events don't have a problem with it.
The compromise between authenticity and practicality. That's always the question.
And then, of course, you need wooden spoons for stirring. Those are actually historically correct. Wood was the material for kitchen utensils.
I still remember my first time cooking at camp. That was...
Let me guess, chaotic?
Totally. I was standing there at the fire, smoke constantly blowing in my face. I had no idea how hot it really was.
Everyone knows that. Heat regulation is the biggest difference from the stove at home.
You learn it over time. You watch the embers, not the flames. And you accept that not everything will cook perfectly evenly.
That's part of the charm too. Cooking over fire has that unpredictability.
But that's exactly what makes it special. You're really engaged in the cooking, not just waiting for the timer to beep.
And the communal aspect, standing by the fire, cooking together, talking, when the meat aroma rises.
That's a sign of hospitality.
Always. And then you sit together, share the food, tell stories.
Do you have tips for people who want to get started?
Start small. You don't need the complete setup right away. A simple pot, a tripod, maybe a wooden board as a lid. That's enough to get started.
And a recipe that forgives mistakes. Stews are perfect for that. If it cooks a bit longer than planned, it usually just gets better.
By the way, there's a detailed article on camp equipment on the Battle Merchant blog. Everything is explained in detail there.
But the most important thing is, just start. Your first attempt doesn't have to be perfect.
And don't be afraid of the fire. That sounds obvious, but many people are unsure at first.
Respect, yes. Fear, no. You quickly learn how the heat feels, when you need to add more wood, when to hang the pot higher.
And then you're sitting by the fire in the evening, the food is ready, the stars are coming out.
That's the moment you do all this for.
So, that was our meat vegetables. A simple dish, but one that really fills you up and satisfies.
Three courses, all with ingredients anyone can get, and on the table in about an hour. That's...
pretty impressive for a complete menu.
And the beautiful thing is, you don't need a campfire for it. It works just as well on the regular stove at home. The pots are different, but the principle stays the same.
Sauté the onions, deglaze with meat, add the vegetables, let it simmer. That works in any kitchen.
If you want to see exactly how it's done, there's a video. Christine and Stefan cook the whole thing step by step and give extra tips for camp cooking.
They also philosophize about medieval ingredients. It's really worth watching.
And you know, the most important thing isn't actually the perfect result.
But rather?
The fun of it. Cooking together, experimenting, sharing. Whether at the campfire or in your home kitchen, the experience is what counts.
You're right. History comes alive when you can taste it.
And smell it. That meat aroma.
That stays in your memory, yes.
So give it a try. Even if you've never cooked over a fire before, just start. And remember, this recipe forgives beginner mistakes.
And if you want to learn more about camp cooking, equipment, or other medieval topics, there's plenty to discover on the blog at battlemerchant.com.
There you'll find lots of recipes, tutorials, and background knowledge for anyone interested in history.
So, all that's left for us is to wish you bon appétit.
Enjoy your meal.
Thanks for listening. Until next time.
Bye.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.